Thanks for clicking play on the Eastlake Tri-Cities Talks podcast. If you're new to this, we're trying to be the best church option for people in the Tri-Cities who aren't typically into church. We hope today's talk inspires you to take next steps in doing life in the way Jesus modeled and taught. If you're ever interested in being a part of one of our in-person gatherings, they take place every Sunday at the Uptown Theater in Richland. Check the website for current times. And regardless of what you look like, who you voted for, or where your tattoos are, we'd love to have you. But for now, here's our most recent talk.
Well, I'm glad to be here this morning. It's always a privilege and a delight to be with you at Eastlake. I love it. And you know, if this were March Madness, I would be the second string. They'd call me off the bench for the second or maybe the third or fourth string, but I'm okay with that. So, hey, can I also give a shout out to the Eastlake team here? You know, I came in early, of course, and I walked to the door, and there's just one gal there right now, and there are more down in here, but she introduced herself as Linda, and I said, Linda, what do you do around here? She goes, oh, I come in and I clean, and I come in on Sunday mornings, and I set up, and I make the coffee, and I make everything is just right. And then I met Erin, and she came through the door with coffee, and she's going to start on making that. And I'm just so impressed. And then there's of course, the media team and the band and all of that. All of that has to come together so that you can enjoy an environment where you can encounter God in a real way. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scene for that to happen. And I just want to give, and there's people over there watching your kids while you get to be in here. So shout out to the team. Thank you. Yeah. And here's the deal. If you want to be part of that team, if you have been sitting back there and you've thought to yourself in the past, or maybe today you go, I could do something, you know, I can greet, you know, I know a little bit about media, you know, why not jump in? Why not jump in and make Eastlake an even greater influence and gift to our community here? And so, you know, easy to do, talk to someone, write it down, do something on the app. Just let someone know, like, hey, I'm available. Whatever you want, I'll do for you. And that's, I know they would appreciate that, and you would flourish when you do that as well. So we are in the part three, the final sermon on our journey through the Via Dolorosa, and it's just perfect today, setting us up for Easter. We're going to talk about what's called Good Friday. And this was the day that's remembered when Jesus entered an upper room and shared a meal with his disciples just hours before he was arrested and crucified. So this was the last thing Jesus did. And how many know that when someone knows they're going to die, they kind of save the best for last, right? It's like, this is the most important thing, is this. And typically, again, with Good Friday, it's often a time of a service where it's very solemn, and it's a time that remember the sacrifice and the brutality and all of the things that Christ endured just before he was crucified. And it's a day of remembering that, and we should remember that. That's certainly a part of Good Friday, the tradition of that. And we remember the sacrifice of Jesus. But remembering, there was an ancient Jewish understanding of remembrance, and it's very different than our tradition of remembrance. In the Jewish world, remembrance, it wasn't just a mental activity. It wasn't just something you thought about. Remembrance meant recalling the past event so it may be entered into the present. In fact, so what I'm saying is it's not just a story of Jesus that we mentally give assent to. We remember the things that happened to him. But what Jesus did back then matters for today. The things that were accomplished on the cross and the suffering he endured really, really matter. They count for today, and it changes everything for us. It's not just remembering the past, but looking at how it influences our present. That matters for this. So in other words, our salvation is not just an event of the past. You say, I was saved when. It's not just an event of the future that we look forward to, heaven. The thing is, if our salvation is only an event of the past or something we look to in the future, the big problem with that is that all of this in between becomes detached in our lives. The thing that Jesus did becomes detached. So it's not so much what Jesus did as much as in about our salvation, although it is, it's also so much about what he is doing now. We don't want to leave what Jesus did detached from what's happening today, right where you are. You are not just saved, you are being saved, even now. So now we join Jesus with his disciples. He had entered Jerusalem, and now we find him in an upper room, gathered around a table with his disciples and sharing the Passover meal. Now, I don't know about you, but I think if I knew that I was going to die in just a few hours, I don't think I would share it with the meal. I would spend my time with the meal, with my friends. I think I would be spend my time doling out instructions and hammering out a plan and setting expectations after why I was gone. Okay, guys, this is how you do it. You need to keep up your end of the bargain. I'm doing mine. You keep up your end. I think that's how I would spend that time doing that. But Jesus didn't, not even close. He didn't leave us with a dogma to be defended at all costs. He did not have us focus on perfecting our beliefs or mastering techniques or coming up with a surefire formula for achieving the spiritual life. He didn't force our salvation into self-sufficiency. He did not pile on more rules and regulations, leaving us to rely simply on our own willpower, determination, and unwavering resolve. He didn't do any of those things. I've always found it amazing that what he left us with was a meal. A meal. See, the abundant life has nothing to do with following the rules or polishing up your behavior. Because the reality is, you can work hard for God and live with a diminished soul. You can do all the right things and say all the right things and still live without any interaction with Jesus at all. So what I want us to do this morning, we're going to reenact. We're going to talk about communion. We're going to take communion. And communion is really kind of a reenactment of what took place at that final dinner, Passover dinner, that Jesus spent with his disciples. The recording of what happened is found in 1 Corinthians, written by the Apostle Paul. And I want to start with reading that, and then we're going to kind of do a deeper dive into it this morning. So follow along with me. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, he took bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." Now, communion, again, is typically symbolized by the taking of bread and the cup, right? And we're going to do that. But it's more than just, we do this more than just remembering the suffering of Jesus. More than event, it's more than event that happens on a Sunday morning. Communion actually becomes a way of living and moving in the world, and it should shape our every waking moment. Communion should shape our lives in profound ways, and I'm going to unpack that today with us. But for right now, I'm going to invite those who are serving us this morning to go ahead and come. We are going to go ahead and receive the communion elements. There's going to be four stations, one in the front, or two in the front, and two in the back. And I'm going to invite someone from your family unit, whether you're alone or you came with others. I'm going to invite you to come and get enough cups for your family or whoever needs it in your who you're with kind of thing. I'm going to send you, And then I'm going to send you back to your seats to distribute with who you came with. And then I'll give you instructions. But go ahead and hold on to them. We're not going to serve them just yet. So go ahead, those who want to need to stand up, communion here and here and in the back. So go ahead and do that. Okay, like I said, go ahead and hold on to those, and I'll give some instructions just a little bit later and when we take them together. So I want to do this deeper dive. I'm going to dissect kind of this passage about the Lord's Supper as we go along. So first it says, the Apostle Paul writing, he says, "For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed." On the night he was betrayed, Jesus instituted a new meal. They were sharing the Passover meal, but Jesus was instituting a new meal, a meal that would come to define his followers. And then it says that he took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Now this, when Jesus did that, he took the bread, gave thanks, and broke it and gave it. This would have been really familiar to the disciples because Jesus did this on several occasions in his ministry over the 3 years that they walked with him. In fact, there's at least four recorded times where Jesus did that. There's more, but the ones that are recorded the most are, you've heard of the feeding of the 5,000 or the 4,000 perhaps, but it was at least four times where Jesus was gathered on a hillside and there were thousands of people gathered. And they were listening to him teach. And then one of the disciples would come up to Jesus and tug on him and go, "You know, Jesus, so it's getting late. Everybody's hungry. And we don't have any food. We should send them away." And Jesus said, "No, don't send them away." And he had his disciples. He had two loaves of bread. And had someone give them to him. And he took, let me read the passage too. "And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. And taking the five loaves and two fish," that's all they had, five loaves and two fish. And here we go. "Looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. And then he gave them." There's the pattern. He gave them to the disciples and the disciples gave them to the people. And I'm going to stop there. So, Here's the amazing part. Jesus declared, and it's recorded in John chapter 6, he said to this, he said, "I am the bread of life." Bread is the most basic food that we can receive to sustain life. If you run out of everything and you still have bread, you're going to make it, right? Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life." And when he distributed the bread that day to those who had gathered, he was giving them the most basic sustenance of life. It would keep them until they got home. But after that bread was distributed, what happened? The disciples collected the extra bread and they had 12, from two loaves, 12 full baskets of bread left over. Bread is never just about sustenance. When Jesus said, "I am the bread of life," it was never just kind of maintaining life for us. It was always about abundance. It was always about abundance. It says they all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 baskets were left over. Jesus, by giving his body through the bread, made the abundant, overflowing life with God possible now. Our life with Jesus should never be about the same old, going through our days, living our days with Jesus disconnected from what he's doing in our lives. Life with Jesus is an abundant life, an overflowing, nourishing, life-giving life to us. that we should enjoy and live into. The bread is invitation into life in the fullest. And this is what Jesus was saying when he held up that bread and gave it to his disciples in communion. Jesus offered his body on the cross that we might experience life to the full. Let's move on. It goes on in the passage. It says, in the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This is the cup. This is the cup of the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." Again, it's just not remembering. But why does that remembering, how does the cup affect us today? Why does it matter? We see from the very beginning of the creation story that God's deepest desire was to dwell with us. He created us to be in relationship with him. But because of sin, that relationship was severed. And so what happened is God had to find a different place to dwell. So we see some of the examples when Moses was leading the people out of Egypt, out of slavery into freedom, and on their journey to the promised land, God walked with them on this journey, and he went before them as a pillar of cloud and behind them as a pillar of fire. God's presence led them and came behind them. Later, after they reached the promised land, now instead of having to journey with them on a journey, his presence was contained in what was called the Ark of the Covenant. It was like a portable tabernacle. And wherever the Israelites went, they carried the tabernacle, the moving tabernacle of God's presence with them. And then finally, when they were able to build a temple to the Lord, his presence also dwell in the temple. The problem was, the temple, there were several layers to go through to get into the inner layer. And to the most innerward layer was called the Holy of Holies. And nobody was allowed in except for one person, and that was the high priest. And then only one time a year was he able to go in and stand in God's presence. So the problem with all of that is that God, again, was disconnected from us personally. He became a God who was impersonal, inaccessible, distant, and detached from our everyday lives. But here's the best part, is this cup of communion reminds us that we now have access, immediate access to the presence of God. We now can experience God as near and accessible and profoundly interactive in our lives. This cup represents the new covenant by his Spirit who now dwells in us. He doesn't dwell in temples and tabernacles made by men. He now dwells in us. And we can experience the abundant life that Jesus talked about because he becomes a personal, interactive, living presence in us. You'll have to read Romans 8. It talks about that the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead is that same Spirit who lives in us, who is real and present and dynamically active, bringing about salvation in our lives. He is always active. He is always doing something. He is always inviting you into greater abundance in him. He is never personal. He is never a force. He's not the great force. He is never abstract. He is never an idea, a theological concept, or a principle to live by. Jesus is none of that. When he shed his blood on the cross, he gave us himself. He's not distant from us. He's not aloof. He's not uninterested. He's not incapable. So oftentimes I think we relate to Jesus like that. We kind of think that Jesus is out here, right? Kind of distant. We're not sure he's, if he's noticing, We're not sure. But our job, we think, is to get Jesus from here to come here. Whatever we're going through, our prayers are out here, and we're trying to convince him to come here and perhaps work on our behalf. It's not like that. Jesus isn't out here, he's in here. He is available and near and present all the time because he lives in you. God now dwells in you because of the new covenant. It's not the old covenant where God is distant. It's now the new covenant where he chooses to dwell in us. So we come to discover that the spiritual life is very less and less about us trying to make things happen and more about discovering and responding to all the ways that Jesus is active and bringing salvation into our lives today. It's so much about that. So I want to read a couple of passages that kind of brings us home for us. The first one is recorded in the book of Hebrews, chapter 9. It says, through the Spirit, Christ offered himself as an unblemished sacrifice, freeing us from all of those dead end efforts to make ourselves acceptable so that we can live all out for God. Can I tell you, you are acceptable just the way you are worthy. There is nothing that keeps you from the presence. There is nothing that you can do to make your life acceptable to God. It's already been that way. God has already taken the first step. He's not waiting for you to conform your life and to be good and to figure things out. His Spirit lives in you. You are already invited into this abundant life with Christ in which he dwells. Hebrews chapter 10 goes on. It says, he set aside the first in order to enact the new plan, the new covenant, God's way, by which we are made fit for God by the once and for all sacrifice of Jesus. We have been made fit for God once and for all. There's nothing to prove. No hoops you have to jump through. It's not about being good. It's about noticing and responding the presence of Christ who lives in you. When we accept Jesus' invitation into a life with him, God actually enters into living in us. That means that everything about God is available to us in the very context of our lives. Whatever you're going through, whatever pain, whatever disillusionment, whatever doubt, whatever anxiety and fear that you are experiencing, God enters into those things with his presence. He goes, when you leave the room today, you take God's presence with you and goes with you on Monday morning when you're dealing with a snarky boss. He's still present. He's still at work. It's no longer what you do for God, but what God is doing in you. Because we really can work for God, work hard for God, and never have interaction with him at all. We can work hard for God and still live with a diminished soul. It's not about working hard for God. It's about responding to the presence of God who's in you. And God is always doing something. Can I tell you? He is always, there is not a moment that he is not dynamically at work in your life, birthing something new in you, allowing something new to unfold in your life, healing you, calling you, redeeming you, inviting you. Every moment, he's always actively doing that. So I love this quote by Eugene Peterson. He's my favorite author. You should try and read him. If you get a chance, you should read him. It's always life-giving. He said this. He said, Christians should live on tiptoe, alert, attentive, wide-eyed, to all of the way the Spirit is guiding, healing, restoring, birthing joy, offering comfort, and inviting you into his saving ways. We should live on tiptoe because God lives in us and he's dynamically at work in all the ways saving us, taking us from here to here. I love that. I'm glad you took a picture of it. So every time we take communion, and we eat the bread and we drink this cup, we remind ourselves that Jesus, who gave himself for us, he made a life with God possible, a life richer and fuller than we could ever imagine on our own. You know, whatever you're going through right now, my tendency is to whatever I need God to fix, you know, wherever I need God to come and, you know, make something happen, I tend to give God like five options to fix this in my life, right? Okay, I'm going to help God out and I'm going to give him five options how he can make life better for me. Well, come to find out, I am not smart enough. I am not strong enough. I'm not correct. I'm not anything enough to figure out life on my own. So what I've decided to do is just to say yes to Jesus. I know he's at work in my life. I know he's bringing the things that are needed in my life. And I just decided a long time ago that whatever God is doing, whatever he's calling me into, whatever he's inviting me to set aside or step into, I've decided to say yes to that. Because it's so much better, so much more than I could ever imagine. Like, yes, whatever you're doing, God, I say yes to that. Wherever it leads, I don't have to know where it leads. I don't have to know where it ends. I trust that you're in it, and that's good enough. And there will always be good, and it will always be wise in my life. And it'll always be life-giving in my life. So Jesus said, don't forget these things. That life abundant, there's a life more abundant, more full, more fresh than you ever imagined, because he's the bread of life. Don't forget that that God now dwells in you. He is not a distant God that you have to convince to come and help you out. He lives in you, and he is already bringing about salvation. He's already active in your life. Jesus said, don't forget that. Don't forget those things. And then finally, it says in that last verse of scripture that we read, it says, finally, for whenever you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Now, for years and years and years, we said those verses, we took communion. I wasn't really sure what that meant or how that looked. Because to proclaim the Lord's death when we take communion, it's like nobody's in here. Like, you know, nobody has seen this. How do I proclaim the Lord's death when we take communion? What I came to understand is this, is that there is one more table that we need to share in. As we leave the communion table and we go to our homes and to our places of work and visit with our family, Jesus sends us into a world that needs a table. When we partake of the bread, we now become the bread and we become life-giving to those around us. We are now the bread. We now have become the hosts of the table. We now serve and invite the stranger into friendship with us, with acts of kindness and mercy, not by argument or hostility. We invite people to the table. In a culture of isolation and loneliness, we invite others into our lives, being graciously present to them, and listening with compassion. Doing those things can be one of the most spiritual things and loving things that you can do in our world. Because now we live as grace bearers to those around us. That's what taking the bread represents for us. We now become life-giving bread to those around us. And when we share in this cup, we who have been caught up into a life with God, we now embody, remember, his dwells in us. We now embody the presence of Christ who dwells in us to a world who has not yet seen him. I always think of myself as wherever I go, wherever I enter, whoever I'm talking to, that I bring the presence of Christ with me. And I hope that through my actions and my words and my gaze, that they notice something different, that they notice the presence of God with them. Because now what we offer others is the presence of God. The gospel is most compelling, I am convinced. The gospel is most compelling when our lives reflect the reality of Christ. That's what it means when Jesus said, how we proclaim the Lord's death. We proclaim his death. Remember his death and what it means? His death means abundance. His death means God dwelling. That's the message we proclaim to those around us when the reality of Christ is seen in our lives. I love that. So we proclaim the gospel with our everyday lives. And when I said earlier that communion is a way of living and moving in the world and has come to define us in our lives with Jesus, that's what it means, that we proclaim the gospel with our everyday lives. So perhaps every time we offer others this table of friendship and compassion, and this gracious work of loving our neighbor, that becomes by which we proclaim the Lord's death and all that that death means. Years ago, a friend of mine was going to Greece, and I heard about that, and I said, oh, could you bring me a bread press back from Greece? I had come across it earlier, and I'd asked her, and I said, would you bring one back for me? She said, I'll get one too. So when she went to Greece, she went to a Greek Orthodox church, and she entered the church, and she met the priest of the church, and she told her what she wanted and was going to, you know, if she could buy two presses from him. And this incredible act of hospitality, he invited my friend to his home for dinner that night. And he set a table for her. And through that setting of the table, he offered her kindness and compassion and generosity and hospitality and friendship and conversation. All of that took place at the table that she wasn't expecting. I love that. And when she came home, she said that that experience was far more impressive than all of the architecture and all of the ruins of Greece, all of the historical archaeology. She said it was that moment that she brought back that most impacted her life. And here's the really great thing. After the meal and she was ready to say goodbye, he gifted two of these bread presses to take home with her to give to her friend. And that's how I got this. So my tradition, when I have the privilege of serving communion, my tradition is that I make the communion bread. And as I'm making the bread, as I'm kneading the dough, my favorite thing is while I'm kneading the dough, whoever is going to be receiving the bread, I pray for them. I prayed for you. I usually try and I get a list. I didn't have a list. And I pray for them by name, but I prayed for Eastlake. I prayed that you would become the light in this world. I pray that you would understand the presence of God in your life and come to know Christ in an even deeper way. I pray that you would become an even greater life that shines in our community and represents Christ. I prayed that over all of you. And I pray it may be so. But then after the dough has been, if you're a baker, you know that it gets raised twice. So I've already had one raise, and then you knead it. And on the second rise, I take this bread press. It's the press that the Greek Orthodox uses for the communion bread. This is what they use. And I took the press, and as it was rising for a second time, I pressed it down. And while it's rising, I kept it pressed down in the bread. So that after I took it off and I baked the bread, the imprint stayed. I don't know if you can see it. You can come up afterwards. But the imprint stayed. And on this bread press, there's a whole bunch of Greek symbols. I don't know them. I don't understand them. But I do know that in the middle, there are three Greek symbols. And I don't know what they say, but I do know some. She told me what the priest said, what they mean. And in the middle of this pressed bread, on this risen bread, are the words, Jesus Christ victorious. And I love that that's what we stamp on risen bread. And he is victorious in our lives. And he's abundant. He's more than we could ever imagine. And he meets us exactly. There's nothing you have to do to convince him to be with you or to help you. He's already at work, already inviting you into something new and fresh. So let's go ahead and partake with communion now together.
Thanks again for listening. If you've got more questions about the church or community group options for connecting with East Lakers outside of Sunday mornings, I'd encourage you to check out our website, eastlaketricities.com, or better yet, download our app by searching East Lake Tri-Cities in your favorite app store.